My reputation as a composer owes everything to the esteemed French publishing industry, which may sound peculiar, but is undeniably true. Were it not for the Parisian publishers who championed my works, there would be absolutely nothing left of my compositions. Not a single document remains in my own hand. No letters, contracts, invoices, or scores. Nothing. My handwriting just vanished into the ether. It's only with a stroke of fortune that I managed to secure publications that I did. And I must clarify that I composed far more than what saw the light of day. Those unpublished works have been lost, making my surviving oeuvre indebted to the publishing houses with which I collaborated. In this regard, I consider myself fortunate. As fate would have it, I arrived in Paris precisely when the city's publishing world was in the midst of a revolution. In the 17th century, the Italians, especially the Venetians, held sway. By the early 1700s, the Netherlands, with cities like Amsterdam and The Hague, had assumed the mantle. From the mid-18th century onwards, Paris gradually rose in prominence. Publishing houses, both large and small, sprung up like mushrooms. You may verify it for yourself, but I am convinced that more music was published in Paris during the latter half of the 18th century than in the rest of Europe combined. Notable composers such as Stamitz, Haydn, and Mozart would eventually establish ties with Parisian publishers. The appetite for new music seemed insatiable, and as is often the case in this world, the French capital ascended to the throne. Many of these publishers were exceedingly small, focusing on specific niches. Take my initial publisher, Moria. They operated from the Faubourg Saint-Germain, the very neighbourhood where I and many of my contemporaries resided. It was a modest establishment, primarily dedicated to chamber music. While I took pride in the collection of symphonies that rolled off their presses as Opus 1, it turned out to be a rather hastily and inexpensively executed edition. Regrettably, it contained numerous errors, leading me to reissue the collection through a different company 5 years later. Anyway, for my second collection of symphonies, I collaborated with the esteemed firm of Françoise Béraud. The wife of my colleague, composer Jean-Baptiste Béraud, her reputation was impeccable, and she disseminated more meticulously crafted editions into the world. Gossec, too, chose to work with her. In 1767, my chamber music work, a trio in C major, found publication under the banner of Jean-Augustin Granger's establishment. I didn't work with him for long. Though this gentleman produced excellent editions at a reasonable cost, he proved utterly inept at managing his business affairs. His company succumbed to losses, and within 3 years he was declared bankrupt. Consequently, I entrusted the publication of my 6 string quartets, Opus 5, to another firm, Le Menu, led by Charles-Georges Boyer, renowned for his seamless collaboration and top-notch editions. Eventually, when it came to publishing the symphonies that I wished to be performed by Gossec and Le Concert des Amateurs, I sought out the finest publisher in town. I found myself in the company of Louis Balthasar de la Chevardière, a man of international stature and repute. He published the music of Stamitz, Haydn, and Christian Bach. His services came at a premium, but Le Mans de Bruges deserves nothing but the very best. Publishing scores was a task that composers undertook at their own expense. It entailed raising the necessary funds to cover the costs of publication. In my case, like many others, I relied on my connections within the aristocratic circles to achieve this. The key was to dedicate each publication to a nobleman with whom one shared a good rapport. By securing their trust in my talent, they would proudly associate themselves with the circulation of my music, enhancing their own reputation in the process. In return for prominently featuring their name on the title page, they would graciously bear the burden of the printing expenses. Hence, nearly all of my publications are dedicated to young nobles who formed part of my personal network. Therefore, my surviving body of work owes its existence not only to the Parisian publishing industry, but also to those aristocrats who were willing to invest in it, because that was what it was for them, an investment. If one managed matters cleverly, it was even possible to generate some income from these publications. In 1769, for instance, I published 6 quartets as my Opus 3. 3 of them were composed for flute, bassoon, violin and cello, while the remaining 3 were intended for oboe, violin, bassoon and cello. Naturally, one could interchange the instruments and even transform the composition into a string quartet with a first violin, second violin, viola and cello. I must confess that these provisions may appear rather peculiar and perhaps even somewhat eccentric. Nevertheless, the adaptability of these instruments was driven by purely commercial considerations. Regardless of the particular instruments played by oneself and one's colleagues, with a bit of rearranging, a suitable lineup could always be achieved. A similar commercial motive can be observed in my 6-string quartets, Opus 5, published in 1771. These comprised arrangements of well-known opera melodies by the celebrated composers André Gretry and Françoise Philidor. The string quartets were ingeniously constructed from the most beloved motifs of their recent operas. It proved a convenient and above all straightforward method of capitalizing on the works of others. Oh, don't worry, it was entirely legal, as copyright laws did not exist in those times. Even Mozart and Beethoven incorporated renowned opera melodies by other composers into their chamber music settings. So why would I refrain from doing so? Am I right? The world of Parisian music publishers was undeniably demanding. However, it played an instrumental role in shaping the course of classical music history. The sheer quantity of scores disseminated at affordable prices for an increasingly fashionable society resulted in swiftly changing tastes, compelling composers to constantly reinvent themselves. The music publishing industry contributed to prolonging the lifespan of musical compositions. What was written in Mannheim, Vienna, London, or Brussels could be published in Paris a few months later and performed in Madrid or St. Petersburg a few weeks thereafter. The same held true for my own music. Presently, editions of my compositions can be found in libraries across Europe. Prague, Stockholm, Milan, Rome, you name it. How they made their way there? Well, who knows? But one thing is certain. Without them, my music would have certainly been lost. Yes, it is the one who is published and disseminated that leaves a lasting legacy. And that includes my good old self, Hébert Leemans.